The ballots for congressional races have a way of looking similar from election to election. The power of the incumbency is such that a person in Congress is likely to stay in Congress if they run for re-election. In the Oregon 4th Congressional District, the ballot this year looks very much like the ballot for the last three elections, because the same two major party candidates appear, incumbent and challenger. Republican Art Robinson from Cave Junction is challenging incumbent Democrat Peter DeFazio from Springfield for a fourth straight election. The district is big and diverse, including all of southwestern Oregon west of the Cascades, except for Jackson County and Grants Pass, and it ranges north all the way to Corvallis. We'll visit with both candidates in turn this hour, beginning with Congressman Peter DeFazio from Oregon's 4th Congressional District. Congressman, good to have you back.
Jeffrey, thank you. Appreciate the opportunity.
Your District 2 counterpart, Greg Walden, visited last week, and he gave some big numbers of bills that made it to the House floor. I want to get your view of the level of activity of this Congress, though.
Well, the big number of bills is an irrelevant figure. For instance, probably 10 or 12 of the bills that made it to the floor were repeals of the Affordable Care Act, repetitively time after time after time. This is one of the least productive, most partisan Congresses that I've experienced, and I've been there a long time, as you'll hear from my opponent. But there was a little ray of light, which is the Transportation Committee, where I'm the senior Democrat, the only bill that came out of this Congress that got signed into law. Most of the other bills Greg referenced will not be signed into law, and most of them haven't even been taken up by the Senate, was the long-term surface transportation bill, the first one in a decade. And it's going to produce jobs and investment here in Oregon and across America, make the country more competitive. We also did a good water resources development bill where I got a small port set aside, which is critical for southern Oregon ports. I used to dredge them with earmarks. Republicans banned earmarks, so finally I got a set-aside so our small ports won't show in. So there have been a couple of bills come out of our committee, which is probably the least partisan committee, most bipartisan committee left, but the rest of Congress has been driven to the far, far right of the Republican. Remember, they removed Speaker Boehner, not exactly a liberal. They're now threatening Speaker Ryan. There's a group of 40 or so ultra alt-right Tea Party types who have an identical philosophy to Art Robinson, who are driving the Republicans to an unproductive, hyper-partisan, position.
As a ranking member on the Transportation Subcommittee, you are the ranking member of. I mean, how much can you do when you're not in the party in power?
Well, the 6-year bill was written by the so-called Big Four. Which is myself, the subcommittee ranking member, and Chairman Schuster and his subcommittee ranking member. We came to an agreement on the bill because, again, the alt-right Tea Party extremists said they don't believe the federal government should invest in transportation, as Art Robinson has said, and therefore he had to have Democratic votes to get the bill passed, so I was a full partner. Plus, it's the tradition of that committee. It has the oldest committee in Congress, and it has a bipartisan. I mean, what's partisan about transportation? I mean, there are those who make it that way, the ultra-alt-right Tea Party folks and Art Robinson, but a majority of Republicans, but not enough to pass a bill with only Republican votes, and Democrats think of it as a national priority.
Did this transportation bill emerge with a cute name? We got used to Ice-T and T21 and the like. I kind of lost
track. The last one was named partially after Don Young's wife, Don. It was called Safety Lou. His wife, now deceased, a sweet woman, made great cookies for all of us. It was really nice. But this one was called the FAST Act. I can't remember what the acronym meant. But, it's sort of a tradition that, committee chair gets to, or alternating between the House and the Senate, gets to name the bills.
Peter DeFazio is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, member of Congress for Oregon's 4th Congressional District, running for re-election for a fourth straight election against Art Robinson of Cave Junction. You can join us on the Exchange, 800-838-3760, by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Just watching Congress do basic work, like just taking care of the budget, seems to be an arduous task. So I understand, too, that the recent continuing resolution expires at the end of the year, so you'll have to be back in before the end of the calendar year to put another patch in place?
Sure. The Republican-dominated Senate, Republican-dominated House failed to agree on a budget this year. They did not go through the appropriations process, and instead we had a continuing resolution that goes till December 9th. We will definitely have a lame duck where a number of critical things will come up. One is funding the entire government of the United States. The budget was due on October 1st, punted till December 9th. I expect we'll be there till Christmas. Secondly, the president has said he's going to bring up the Trans-Pacific Partnership, the last and the worst trade agreement that America might ever enter into. I'm a leading opponent, was given an award actually by the National Steelworkers, an annual award for my leadership against all of these disastrous trade agreements. And this one would be the last and the worst because it's a living agreement. Anybody can sign up in the future. China's already said they want in. They can game this one better than the others. And it would give the communist-dominated corporations in China the right to challenge our consumer protection laws, our environmental laws, our labor laws, because it's costing them profits in a private court with the judges being trade lawyers with no appeal. It's absolutely disastrous and outrageous.
Is that your major argument with all those trade deals, NAFTA, CAFTA, and TPP, that they send some power offshore to have a say in what we do onshore?
Well, this one's the worst. Under NAFTA, the Canadian government has to bring the complaint, which they did on behalf of TransCanada. They're suing us for $15 billion because we didn't allow the disastrous Keystone XL pipeline, and they might win. But at least under that NAFTA, it has to be brought by our government, and there's an appeal process. Under CAFTA, the complaints can only be brought to a private court by corporations that are run by corporate lawyers, and there is no appeal of their decisions. So it's way worse. I mean, Joseph Stiglitz, one of the most renowned economists in America, has said, we made a big mistake, and he worked in the Clinton administration when we opened the door to regulatory taking to NAFTA. He said, but this slams it wide open forever, and this will be an absolute disaster for consumer protections, environmental protections, labor laws in this country. I mean, we're under threat under NAFTA, $15 billion for denying Keystone XL. Every local ordinance, city ordinance, state ordinance, anything that costs a corporation's profit would be vulnerable in a private court under the TPP.
Let's pivot to talking about corporations and campaign contributions and money in politics generally. I noticed the top five contributors to your reelection committee are airlines and railroads. I mean, it makes sense. You're on the Transportation Committee. How often do you hear from Delta Airlines or CSX, the railroad, and what do they want to talk about?
Well, Delta actually and I have been working closely together because they're opposed to the privatization of our air traffic control system. A number of the big airlines through something called A4A are proposing to privatize air traffic control in the United States, which would be an anti-consumer, anti-safety bill. And I'm fighting the chairman of the committee on that. We generally get along. We agree on most of the FAA bill. We disagree on that. So I've been working very closely with them. I proposed strong regulations and working with the railroads. For instance, I pushed for 2 years to get rid of the crummy 111 oil tank cars that were designed to carry things like milk and have a modern state-of-the-art double-walled car that has the thermal insulation. And I had to fight with the Obama administration to get that rule through. And the railroads actually supported it. They're the ones who have to transport the stuff under the Constitution and federal law. They are required to take whatever a customer brings to them. And many of the railroads wanted to get rid of these crappy 111 cars, which they don't own. They're owned by Wall Street investors. And the Wall Street investors, of course, don't care. And they want, because they're going to try and pass a liability to the railroad when a car goes off the track. So there's a lot of things I do in those areas that are, that are very important.
Congressman, your name came up in a story about the Hoboken train wreck, of all things, because of campaign money and the delay implementing PTC, positive train control. Why did the railroads get a 3-year extension in implementing?
Well, because this is unbelievably complicated technology, and some of them drug their feet. So it was clear none of the public railroads, which would be the commuter railroads in many places, or the private railroads, with the exception of Burlington Northern, who was moving ahead way quicker than everybody else, we're going to meet the deadline. It wasn't clear what would happen at that point. Many of the railroads said they would just have to stop taking freight And on a bipartisan, near unanimous basis, we extended the deadline, but we extended it with benchmarks. They have to prove they're making progress, and we gave authority to the Federal Railroad Administration to go after any railroad that isn't making progress. This is very complex. The federal government delayed this. FCC wouldn't grant the railroads just a broad license to install the towers along their lines that would transmit, and there was a huge fight at the FCC, which delayed everything for about 24 months. That's the Federal Communications Commission, a federal agency, which was blocking what another federal agency was trying to require the railroads to do because of a fight over spectrum.
Representative Peter DeFazio is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. He represents Oregon's 4th Congressional District in Washington. He's from Springfield. He's running for his 16th term against Art Robinson, a Republican from Cave Junction. We'll hear from him in a few minutes. We have an email here from Vicky, no town given. She says, I'm concerned about two things. First, what are your thoughts about the recent situation with Planned Parenthood and Zika funding, and do they support women's health care? Second, so much money in politics these days, it seems corrupt. What do you feel about the super PACs, and have you ever been supported by super PACs?
No, actually, I was the first member of Congress ever attacked by a super PAC. Post Citizens United have had zero support from super PACs. One Wall Street billionaire who has contributed very generously to Art Robinson's so-called institute, or whatever he calls his survivalist compound, millions of dollars, and who has also, he attacked me and has spent well over $1 million attacking me. That was the first member attack. I'm on a number of bills to overturn Citizens United. It has put our democracy at risk. Now, the same billionaire is now running Trump's campaign and is his largest benefactor, having been the largest benefactor of Cruz in the primary. This is outrageous. When one ultra-right-wing nut on Wall Street can, you know, give tens of millions of dollars to one candidate and say, don't worry, there's not going to be any undue influence. Give me a break. That's got to change. And then, there was a question before that.
It was about the Zika and Planned Parenthood.
Yeah, well, this is one of the largest contrasts between myself and Art Robinson. I have always supported a woman's right to choice. I support Planned Parenthood. I oppose the Republicans on this. And Art Robinson says he is rabidly pro-life. Even if a woman is raped, he says, this is really loathsome, but I'm going to repeat it. He says a woman must carry the child to term. But she should be generously compensated by the government. I think that's pretty crazy. So I am a strong supporter of women's right to choice, and I can't believe the Republicans held up critical Zika funding on a political attack against Planned Parenthood.
Call here from Ann in Eugene. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Representative Peter DeFazio.
Thank you so much. And thank you, Congressman DeFazio, for all the service since, 1986, I think it is. Anyway, is there any possible way that we can ever get the massive amounts of billionaire money out of our political system since they control the Republican Congress? There's all this gerrymandering in red states, and there's all this voter suppression in red states. So, thank you.
All right, thanks for that, Ann. Appreciate it.
Well, she's pointing to a huge problem in the Supreme Court. Justice Robertson, one of the most activist decisions in history, overturned 100 years of precedent, said corporations are people and money is speech, and opened the door wide open for billionaires and corporations to try and buy our democracy, which they're trying to do, and corrupt the system. She also pointed to voter suppression. Again, the activist led by John Roberts overturned the Voting Rights Act, the premier civil rights act. People died. I served with John Lewis in Congress, one of my best friends in Congress. He still has a crease in the top of his head where he was beaten to the ground by a billy club because he simply wanted the same rights that other Americans had back during the civil rights era. The Roberts Court overturned a critical part of the Voting Rights Act, and as we saw in a recent appeals court decision, states like North Carolina undertook a very deliberate approach to try and suppress the black vote. And this is going on in many other states, and amazingly, some of the appeals courts are saying, well, they might have gutted the Voting Rights Act, but that doesn't mean that these states can move forward and actively suppress the rights of people to vote. So, but there's a lot of that going on. So she's pointed to two critical things. I'm on legislation to restore the Voting Rights Act. I'm on a constitutional amendment to take corporations aren't people, money isn't speech, and overturn this activist decision of the Roberts Court. But there's another way to do it. If we elect Hillary Clinton as president, we're not going to get another right-wing zealot who supports gutting civil rights and who is against a woman's right to choice and who wants to give control to billionaires and corporations. And we can reverse those decisions because, in fact, up until the Roberts decision, the Supreme Court had said many times that corporations weren't people, money wasn't speech. It created a whole new law.
Let's come back to issues within the 4th Congressional District specifically, particularly money for counties, timber and timber money. There was not a secure rural schools component of this latest budget fix, is that right?
That's correct. I introduced a bipartisan proposal to continue the guarantees, but unfortunately it was not included. We're going to work on that, and there will be one gigantic year-end budget deal that funds the entire government of the United States. In part, that'll depend upon the presidential election. We're going to push hard to get something in there. But this is tough. It's very tough.
We got the BLM's resource management plan that has come into effect, been finalized since we last talked to you. Is it anything like what you and Greg Walden and Kurt Schrader envisioned 3 years ago?
No, actually, no one likes their plan. It's the same problem with the Clinton plan. This fight started about preserving the old group. There were things people didn't like about what Greg and Kurt and I proposed, but it set off limits any remaining old growth on the ONC lands from any timber harvest. The current BLM plan actually continues the practice of cutting large old trees with clear cuts. And it just has a smaller land base and lower harvest numbers, but it continues the 1970s, 60s forest practices. It did not substantially adopt modern science, which is what we attempted to do, working with Jerry Franklin, Norm Johnson, Gordy Reeves, the most preeminent forest scientist in the world, saying, we can do this all a lot differently. We can still harvest timber, but we can preserve the values and the species we want by doing it in a very different way. The RMP, I think, is a disaster. I think they're being sued both by environmental groups and by the industry and by counties. And sometimes people say, if everybody's against it, must have got something right. No, I don't think they got anything right.
All right. So just being universally hated does not mean you hit exactly in the middle.
Not in that case, no.
All right. You've had a recent announcement about college and costs and a plan to help students pay debts. Can you lay that out for us?
Sure. I've long been concerned. In fact, when I turned back congressional pay raises, it funded over 300 scholarships at community colleges and a few at the U of O. Kids are graduating with a mountain of debt. There's things we can do. We actually make money on the federal student loan program. Well, let's not make money. Let's make it budget neutral and let's turn that profit back to the student. So right now, if you get an income dependent loan, when you earn $17,000 a year, you have to start paying the loan back. And up to $17,000, you accumulate interest. I raised that cap to $27,000 a year. Until you graduate from college, earn $27,000 a year, you won't have to pay back a penny of your federal loan, and interest won't accumulate. And then you pay on a graduated scale. You're not going to immediately kick in with full payments at 27. I take the Pell Grant program, which now is like $5,400 a year. Come on, tuition's $9,000 a year at the U of O. So I move the Pell Grant program up to $9,400 a year, which I think is the average cost of a public institution here in this state. I put graduate students back into federal loans, one of those really bad, stupid year-end budget deals that I voted against. I think the one that was voted on New Year's Eve, the so-called cliff. The Republicans took away the eligibility of graduate students to get federal loans. I've got a new medical school, Lebanon, in my district. I go up there and meet with these young people. Not so young. Some of my families are in the late 20s, early 30s. And they say, I love Oregon. I want to stay here. I want to work in a rural community. But I've got $250,000 of debt at 8% interest. I'm going to have to go to Portland or Seattle or San Francisco to pay off that debt. We need to fix that, and my bill would fix that.
All right, Congressman Peter DeFazio from Oregon's 4th Congressional District, thank you for joining us once again on the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you. Appreciate the opportunity.
Okay.